Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And no, Jim and I have not been drinking martinis all weekend. We are actually going to assign the good martini today to Massachusetts Senator John Kerry. Mark this day down in history, folks, because I can almost assure you it will never happen again, unless, of course, he says this again. John Kerry, the 2004 presidential nominee, was on Face the Nation with Bob Schieffer, and they were talking about Libya. Kerry, of course, is chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, and Schieffer was saying that it could be harder than a lot of people think to impose a no-fly zone on Libya because you have to take out the anti-aircraft facilities, and Kerry then said this.
That's actually not the only option for what one could do. One could crater the airports and the runways and leave them incapable of using them for a period of time.
And Kerry then went on to say we would only do that, though, if Gaddafi were using his air power to terrorize and kill his citizens, which he's clearly already doing. So basically, Kerry is saying we need to do this. And for a guy who, has been on the wrong side of just about every issue, foreign and domestic, he's actually got more guts on this than the president, it seems.
Would that it were, Greg. Would that it were. You know, perhaps we should have thought about this from, you know, a little toughness from a man who probably, did you know he served in Vietnam?
I did. I was
Sorry.
Aware.
Greg, I went back to Kerry spot days. I just flashed back to probably my all-time favorite politician to write about. Very key role in taking my career to new heights. No, if John Kerry is making you look wimpish, you're probably really in trouble. that really, this is the guy who's been generally pretty wrong on all kinds of foreign policy decisions. And I get the feeling this is a guy that is as many flaws as Kerry has. He sees a what some are characterizing as now effectively a civil war in Libya, and in which this is not two sides that are morally equivalent. We have very little upside to keeping Gaddafi in power. And, you know, when you're watching a massacre, when you're seeing one side with, you know, serious military hardware and the other side with the leftovers, then you see some conservatives saying that we have absolutely no interest in preventing massacres in Libya. And I think I'd argue that, no, we do. And I understand you can argue about how much blood and treasure you want to expend. I'm fairly confident that the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Air Force could do some damage to Gaddafi's air forces with minimal risk to our guys. And as he's saying, you know, you might even have to bomb planes. You just bomb runways, you know, that it's a nice target that stays in one place. We're watching something really dramatic going on in Libya. There's this, you know, amazing picture on the front cover of the Washington Post of you know, anti-Gaddafi fighters scrambling to dodge shrapnel. And it's just kind of fascinating to watch the United States just on the sideline and kind of following the British. There's apparently reports that British commandos are getting active in over there, trying to help the rebel forces against Gaddafi. And my understanding is that Obama went golfing this weekend.
That is correct.
You know, which just doesn't – I mean, for those of us who are not fans of the president, this is just, you know, throws one more log onto the fire of various to fuel our arguments against him. But it's a little bit embarrassing to see a struggle for freedom going on in the Middle East, and you know, even Kerry can recognize our interests over there. It'll be fun to watch the Obama administration dismissing John Kerry as a neocon warmonger, doing, you know, probably doing this for, you know, sinister foreign interests or something like that.
One piece of advice, Jim, I think it's fair to pass along to President Obama here. If anything goes wrong after you follow John Kerry's advice, be prepared for him to bail on you instantly. He was very hawkish on Iraq in the minute that there was any sort of sectarian violence. He burned rubber so fast you could see the skid marks as he left the pro-Iraq war camp after things went wrong just a few months after the invasion there in 2003. So,
Craig, let me tell you, I actually voted for the aid to the Libyan rebels before I voted against it, which would clarify my position and all. Yeah, it's worth noting, as I said about what a dove Kerry can be at times. He did vote for the Iraq war. And then spent all the 2004 campaign insisting, no, he didn't really mean it. So on the one hand, you know, perhaps that the Obama administration doesn't want Kerry into the foxhole. But it is rather interesting that if you see John Kerry as a weather vane, then he's a very useful indicator of which way the political winds are blowing. And he does not want the U.S. to be seen as impotent and irrelevant and paralyzed with indecision at a very dramatic moment in Middle East.
Well, as long as the wind doesn't affect his hair, I'm sure he's okay with that characterization. On to a slightly similar story, but obviously this is the bad martini now. And that's the situation involving these hearings later this week to be chaired by the House Homeland Security Committee and its chairman, Peter King, looking into the impact of radical Islam and leading to a lot of the terrorism that we see. That's not the bad part. The bad part is the outrage that many people are suggesting is part of this, because apparently Peter King has a vendetta against Muslims. Why would he pick radical elements of one religion? Jim, I can't imagine why. Here's Peter King explaining why he's doing this.
This is not an attack on Muslims, but the fact is the enemy right now is within the Muslim community.
Now, the White House, ahead of these hearings, is pushing a message of religious tolerance. It even sent the Deputy National Security Advisor, Dennis McDonough, to a Washington area mosque to explain that the administration has nothing against Islam. And Jim, obviously there are more people in the Muslim community that don't take part in terrorism than do. But as Peter King points out, most of the people that do commit acts of terrorism have been radicalized Muslims. And, oh, by the way, a lot of these mosques don't cooperate very much. They don't really help the law enforcement officers that much when they're trying to put together these plots.
You know, Greg, as I come across this story, I try to put my feet in the shoes of Muslim Americans and say, all right, if I were a Muslim, how would I feel about this? And I can understand a certain amount of anxiety. I can understand a sense that, what if these hearings, everyone starts kind of playing to the cameras in these hearings and people start demagoguing and they start saying that my faith is the problem, not certain practitioners or folks who are claiming to act in the name of my faith. Yeah, I guess I could see that, but I don't believe you could say, well, then you can't hold the hearings. I mean, we have to rule the entire topic off limit, somehow unworthy of public discussion because of the possibility of demagoguery. For Pete's sake, if the Supreme Court just said that it's okay to protest military funerals, I think it's safe that Congress can investigate what motivates terrorists. And the other thing which I'm kind of struck by is, let's suppose a worst case scenario that let's not even say Peter King. Let's say, you know, Congressman John Demagogue of some other state decides that he's going to go up there and say, the problem is Islam and every Muslim is a potential terrorist and we got to lock, you know, and calls for internment camps and does the whole Senator Kelly from X-Men routine that we've seen time and time again. Is there any doubt that everybody on every both sides of the aisle and every major figure in political life would jump forward and say, no, that's not true. That's nonsense. There are a lot of good Muslim Americans out there. You can't blame every practitioner of a faith for the actions of certain people within that faith. I just can't see it. So one, this entire discussion and the concerns of mostly folks on the left, but you know, particularly also the Obama administration, reflects a fundamental lack of faith in the good character of the American people that we're capable of making these kinds of distinctions. You know, if these turn into demagoguery, then the right response is to come out and say, you know what, this is demagoguery. You know, if you don't like what's being said at these hearings, say something different. But the idea that we're going to do everything we can to shout these down, to quiet these down, to try to derail them before they start is not helpful. And I'm hearing, you know, some folks saying that certain experts will not testify at these sorts of things. Well, if you really think that there's a danger of this hearing going in the wrong direction, show up and testify. You know, offer more information. The argument if bad information is going out there, the proper response is not to cancel the hearing. It's to put out good information. And I think this is something that American people have a really good reason to be interested in, which is what makes people suddenly decide they want to kill a whole bunch of Americans.
And if there are any radicalized sects of other religions, hold hearings on them too or make them part of the hearing. But if you look at just recent history, the Frankfurt shooter obviously wasn't in this country, but clearly an attack on American service members. You've got the Saudi kid who tried to kill President Bush, didn't get nearly close enough to even really try to pull off the attempt. Najib al-Azazi, Faisal Shahzad, the killer of the army recruiter in Arkansas. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And clearly something is going on with a radicalized part of that particular religion, and something's got to be done about it.
The more non-radicalized Muslims say, you can't look into this, you can't talk about it, you can't hold hearings on it, you can't take – the more, like, you know, I think a lot of ordinary Americans would start getting suspicions and say, right, all right, why do these non-extremist Muslims not want us to talk about it? What's so secret there? What's so dangerous about discussing this topic? And I think that only fuels suspicion of the Muslim community and, you know, suspicion that is probably – that is almost certainly unwarranted, but – if you argue that somehow the Congress is, you know, can't look into this, people will begin to suspect sinister motives.
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, on to the third martini now, and off for some comic relief, given the very serious subjects we've just talked about. David Gregory of Meet the Press is actually doing some of the best work in journalism. We had him on with Richard Trumka last Monday, and now today we have a clip from his interview with White House Chief of Staff Bill Daley. Pretty simple question from David Gregory, and an absolutely unbelievable and ridiculous answer from Bill Daley. Here we go.
Is the president moving to the center to win re-election?
No, the president doesn't look at, this is a guy who does not look at politics and left, center, whatever. He really doesn't. He looks at things, deals with the problem right in front of him, and I've never participated in, even back in when I was co-chair of his campaign in 08, discussions that were around that.
Guy just never even thinks about politics, Jim. It's just, you know, the conditions of the economy. He had to spend $1 trillion on the stimulus. He had to take over GM. He didn't want to do it. He just had to. And, you know, some of the things he did might have looked a little more left than center. But, you know, this is just a guy who wants to do what's right.
You know, I'm actually going to make a bit of a half defense of Daley, and that I don't believe that President Obama turns on the thinking about politics and then turns off the thinking about politics. I think he's constantly thinking about politics, and as a result, it's not like he just at certain times focuses in on it. He just is. You know, this is the guy who once reminded a Democrat that he voted against him and said, "Don't think we're not keeping score, brother." This is the guy whose chief of staff said, "Never waste a crisis." Now, you look at the way the Obama administration handled everything from the oil spill to this current situation in the Middle East. I think the more appropriate slogan is never solve a crisis. just let them go on to perpetuity, and then you can use it to justify getting what you want legislatively. It's not surprising they would vehemently, blatantly deny something that I think every administration going back to George Washington probably has done. It's not enough for them to say, we try really hard to not let the politics get involved with our key decision making. We're going to deny that it ever happens. I just put out the most bold, unbelievable lie possible and just let it fly and see what the consequences are. I don't think anyone's particularly moved or persuaded by it, but that's, you know, in their world, they never think about politics. Their interest and the national interest always coincide perfectly.
I wouldn't believe that statement from the county dog catcher, much less anyone in a highly elected office of either party. If you don't have political instincts and inclinations, there's no way you're ever going to get to that position. And to some extent, they're going to naturally be there. But as you just said, this guy, it's 24/7. And I guess we can probably blame Clinton for that. He's the one that really brought in the permanent campaign. Fun way to start the week, Jim. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Thanks. Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.